It's one of the most peaceful and democratic nations in the world, is the typical saying that is usually attributed to Canada. But it no longer holds water now that the United Nations Human Rights Committee, the UNHRC, released the results of its recent review of Canada's civil and political rights record on July 7th and July 8th, for the first time in nearly a decade. The review aimed to evaluate Canada's adherence to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and the UNHRC's report released on July 23rd raised many concerns about its compliance with this treaty. My name is Emma Noor-Dunkin, and I had the chance to sit down with Tim McSorley, the coordinator of Voices Voix, who spoke of his coalition's involvement in this review and why they believe Canada received a failing grade in this review. The interview was conducted prior to July 23rd, the date of the release of the UNHRC's report.
So my name is Tim McSorley. I'm the coordinator with the Voices Voix Coalition, and our focus is on advocating for freedom of speech, freedom of dissent, and civil liberties in Canada. And in particular, we focus on how the federal government can either improve those situations or more often than not, how the federal government has taken actions that impede on those issues. And so the way that we're involved in the UN review is that basically we've been trying to raise concerns around it and publicize the fact that it's happening. So we didn't actually present ourselves as voices at the United Nations, but one of our board members, Alex Neve, who's also the Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada, was there speaking on behalf officially of Amnesty International, but also brought up the concerns of Voices Voix in particular around issues of civil liberties.
Definitely. Actually, before we get into what your organization is criticizing Canada about, I was just wondering for listeners who aren't too familiar with this United Nations review that's occurring, because it hasn't really been very publicized in newspapers recently. What exactly is this review, and why is it taking place in the first place after 10 years?
So Canada is a signatory of a few different international agreements and treaties, and one of those is called the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. And so every periodically, I'm not sure if it's always every 10 years, but periodically, signatories to that covenant are reviewed by the United Nations Human Rights Committee. The Human Rights Committee is made up of 18 independent human rights experts from around the world. And so the last time that Canada was reviewed for its adherence to the articles of the covenant was 10 years ago. And so this is just when Canada came around in its recent review. They do them in chunks. So Canada was being reviewed, the United Kingdom was being reviewed. I believe maybe Venezuela and a few other countries. I think there were about half a dozen countries that over the month of July have been going through the review process. And so for Canada in particular, Canada and nonprofit and civil rights organizations in Canada had a chance to submit last year their concerns. And Canada could submit their responses as far as how Canada has been following the covenant. And then July 7th and 8th, just a couple weeks ago, Canada faced the review committee in Geneva at the Human Rights at the UN Human Rights Committee chambers there. And so right now we're actually in a period where they've done the presentation. They've been asked questions by the committee, and we can talk about how that went. And we're in kind of the waiting period. And on July 23rd, the committee will be coming out with its concluding observations on whether or not Canada has been following the covenant and ways in which Canada should be looking to improve its adherence to it.
You talked about the civil liberties concern before that Voices Voix had. Other organizations have talked about the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls issue that hasn't been addressed by Canada, and also the controversial terrorism bill C-51. Are there any other concerns that you have brought up at the United Nations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for us, those were two major ones. There was a list of items in particular that the committee, after the pre-review process of talking with NGOs and looking at Canada's record, had come up with. So those were two prominent issues. One of them was also the how Canada shares intelligence information and so information they would gather through something like C51 with other countries and whether or not that's legal and abides by people's privacy rights. They also had questions for Canada about what action it's taking to ensure that when people are deported from Canada, that they're not being deported to places where they might face assault, harassment, or torture, mm-hmm. and also following up on the cases of people like Omar Khadr and other Canadians who have suffered torture abroad, and whether or not they were being given reparations or facing ways to basically make sure that that doesn't happen again in the future. And they were also very interested in how Canada's been addressing other issues of gender equality, including pay equity, including issues of homelessness. And so for us in particular, in the report that we recently came out with called Dismantling Democracy, mm-hmm. we looked at a lot of those issues, but particularly how the federal government has been adopting tactics in order to limit dissent and democracy in Canada, and how that touches on a lot of these issues. So, for example, around the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, looking at how the federal government has been cutting funding to women's organizations, to First Nations organizations and other Native organizations and new organizations, how they've obstructed participation in meetings that would lead to a review, and that could possibly bring up these issues. And so, yeah, so looking at the ways that the Canadian government has been kind of limiting and attacking those, and I can go into more details as to what some of those tactics are, too, if you want.
Actually, what are those tactics exactly?
So they include things like vilification and smearing. So one case study that we actually just came out with today is on the National Council of Canadian Muslims and how they've currently issued notice of libel against the federal government because the prime minister's spokesperson has said that they're linked with terrorist organizations. And following that, other MPs and cabinet ministers have repeated those allegations, mm-hmm. but within the House of Commons and within committees, so they're protected by parliamentary privilege. But that's just one example of several occasions where for a wide range of organizations and issues that the government, instead of addressing the concerns, so the National Council of Canadian Muslims had raised concerns about a controversial figure that was to accompany Stephen Harper on a tour of Israel and the occupied territories. Mm-hmm. And in response, instead of responding to the concerns about this person going with the Prime Minister, they instead alleged that the NCCM has ties to terrorist organizations. And that's something that we've seen time after time. Another issue is the audit of charities, particularly environmental and progressive think tanks, who are charitable organizations, attacking their charitable status and auditing their charitable status, mostly on, it seems like there's a trend that's on the basis of their opposition to Canadian government policy. The muzzling of scientists, so there's been a wide array of scientists working for Environment Canada and other sectors who have ties to the public sector who haven't been able to share or have had limits put on their ability to communicate their results, especially around climate change. And also the biggest one that affects the most organizations is definitely the funding cuts. So we've just seen across the board, whether it's women's organizations, First Nations organizations, as I mentioned, anti-poverty organizations, environmental organizations, it runs the whole gamut, have seen international aid organizations have seen drastic cuts to their funding, and not just in a way where every government changes their decision-making and decides to fund other organizations. What appears to be is a systematic defunding of the most critical organizations and sectorally. And that's where we see a difference, because we recognize that this is a historical issue. A change in governing party doesn't necessarily mean that there will change in policies. But what we've seen is over the last 10 years is a significant shift in how the government interacts with dissenting views, and instead of either engaging or often ignoring, actually trying to cut their resources and limit their ability to act.
Definitely. Actually, the last time that Canada was reviewed by the United Nations Human Rights Committee was in 2005. That was just a year before Harper and the Conservatives came into power. So would you say that the present review is a criticism of the Conservatives or of Canada in general? You said that you don't believe that a change in government would necessarily change all these policies directed towards these groups.
We think that right now we don't know what a future government will do, so we can't really speculate on that. But the position we take as a nonpartisan organization is that these are issues that are of concern with the federal government. There's been previous governments governed by all, at this point either the Liberals or the Conservatives, who have also cut funding, have silenced critics, who have attacked charitable status of organizations. So that's all happened before. And so even if there is a change in government, you know, we wouldn't necessarily expect that would just completely disappear, because it isn't something that's relegated only to one party. But what we've seen is different under this current government, under the Stephen Harper government, has been a shift in the tone and the actions. And so we would hope that would change under a changing government. But at the same time, we're not saying, it's not that, these are things that have popped into the last 10 years and it's never been an issue before. It's just there's been a bit of a shift in how those are, in how it plays out. And we would hope that in the future, by doing this kind of research, by bringing up the UN Human Rights Committee, we'll be able to continue to push the Canadian government to take better stances on civil liberties in Canada.
Actually, that jumps off perfectly on my next question. So what is the desired outcome of this review once the UNHRC will have discussed its findings on July 23rd? Is this Canada had to go through with this panel review because it signed and ratified that treaty under the United Nations? So is Canada forced to redress some of these human rights violations because it ratified this international treaty, or does this panel just simply serve to internationally name and shame Canada for the world to see?
It's definitely more of a name and shame situation. So there's no binding, there's nothing binding, there's no enforcement mechanism for Canada not following the articles of the protocol, or of the covenant, rather. But definitely, and that's our hope in publicizing this review, trying to make sure that people are talking about it, is to be aware of what the findings of this review are, so that it's not able to just kind of be swept under a rug, and that we can also, there's more action, and part of it too is that it's one of the few opportunities, even though it's not enforcing, that a government representative is being held to account and forced to testify and discuss these issues, because one of the things that we've seen, and it's been in the news lately, is that as Prime Minister, Stephen Harper has been avoiding most press conferences or press forums where he could be, questioned in a difficult way on these issues. There's been a lot of, as I mentioned, with the vilification, the avoiding of debate. It's hard to get a clear answer and actually have forums to hold the government accountable. And definitely, so what comes out of it gives a clear picture of what this government actually believes. And what we saw in the testimony were statements like, again, reiterating that the UN Declaration on Indigenous Rights is simply, what's the term that they use? That it's an aspirational document that doesn't actually have binding powers. Which is really disturbing, because it's the only international document that does lay out how colonial governments like the Canadian government should be respecting Indigenous rights, and so by saying that it's solely aspirational, they're essentially denying the fact that they need to follow the articles of this agreement. So things like that, things like saying that international human rights treaties don't actually apply to Canadian companies operating abroad, and that even within Canada, that they're for interpretation only. And so things like that give a clearer picture of to what degree the current government doesn't view its international obligations and international treaties as actually having a direct impact on how they should be governing. And not to say that all, you know, everything is solved through international covenants and agreements, but, you know, I think people would expect that if their country has signed on to these agreements and have agreed that these are the processes and the steps that we should be taking in order to ensure that everybody has a decent life, that we're working to end colonialism, to end poverty, and move away from those issues, then our government should be following them. And so this is an international stage to show exactly how they're not following those steps, and to put on pressure, especially going into an election, to hold members of parliament to account for the statements of the government, to the statements of parties who wish to be in power. And if they all give unsatisfactory remarks and answers, then to also discuss how, you know, people in their communities can organize themselves to, you know, make sure that those issues are properly addressed.
And do you have any news of Alex Neave or any other person, any other individual who's been to the review sessions? What has happened lately?
Yeah, so the review of Canada lasted 2 days. It was the 7th and 8th. It was public. If people go on the Voices Voix website, it's voices-voix.ca. We actually have some information up there about the review, including we put together an accumulation of tweets, because it was a public session, so people were tweeting the questions and the responses from the government. So we've documented that on our website. We'll be posting the review when it comes out. There's actually a transcript of the review that's come out of the discussion that we'll be posting. So we definitely know what the content of the discussion was. And it was maybe adversarial is too strong a word, but definitely at the end, several people, including one esteemed member of the panel, who's a well-regarded human rights advocate in the UK, who said that he was incredibly disappointed with what he had seen from Canada and didn't recognize Canada as a country in their statements and their answers to the committee. So what we've been saying from the beginning, and what we're still sticking to, is that we should be prepared as a country to get a failing grade on this review, that all signs point to Canada has not been following its commitments to the International Covenant on Political and Civil Rights. And that should be something that, you know, on top of everything else that we know here in Canada about, you know, the fact that they're blocking an inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women, the fact that we know there's been cuts to women's organizations, that there's a continued lack of action on climate change and climate justice, that this is another example and another way to raise awareness and discuss the fact that there's significant changes that need to be made in how Canada is governed.
And is there a way that listeners can get involved with your organization and in general, and with respect to this United Nations review?
For sure. With the United Nations review, it's a very formal kind of process, so there's not a lot of ways that people themselves could get involved in that. Definitely especially at this point, the next time that Canada is up for review, there's an open call for submissions of reports from nonprofit organizations and individuals who want to raise concerns. It's a little hard to find, but it's on the UN website. And so the next time Canada is reviewed, you know, it's always great to have as many organizations as possible submitting briefs to bring up these issues. Because in fact, one thing that I don't believe was really listed was much around LGBTQ issues, around trans rights. And so that's definitely something that, you know, in the future, if there's a way to have more people involved, you know, there would be more issues addressed in those reviews. Mm-hmm. But more concretely here, one way definitely for us is we're a public education organization. We produce reports. If people are interested in going on the voices-voix.ca website, and sharing the report that we just did called Dismantling Democracy. It's 60 pages long and documents over 110 cases of how the federal government's been attacking civil liberties in Canada. And even more directly, we're always looking for people who are interested in helping to do research, in doing translation, in doing editing, and things like that. And so if people are interested, they can always contact us at communications@voices-foi.ca, or they can also just go on our website, and there's information on how to get involved and also how to contact us there. So again, it's voices-foi.ca.
Thank you so much for this interview, Tim. And let's hope that Canada's reputation gets tarnished for the better, and that the federal government wakes up and concretely addresses these multiple human rights violations made to their own people.
Thanks. Yeah, no, we definitely feel the same. And thanks a lot for having me on. It's great to be able to discuss this and to share information about the review with a broader audience.